On behalf of the St. Mary's University family and President Thomas Mengler, I welcome you to St. Mary's University for this evening's installment of Community Conversations. I am Dr. Henry Flores, Dean of the Graduate School, and your host this evening. Actually, not your host. I'm just going to introduce Rick Casey, and he'll take over from there. I do want to mention that President Mengler is brand new, and he will be inaugurated on November 9th here at St. Mary's University. We have in attendance, I'd like to recognize some dignitaries. We have Councilman Chris Medina from the City of San Antonio. Father John A. Elias, President Emeritus. Provost Andre Hampton. And our Professor in Public Service, former City Manager Alex Briceño. Tonight's conversation is sponsored by the Institute for Public Administration, Politics, and Public Policy, which provides a forum for research, discussion, and deliberation on public affairs and themes that are of interest to our local community. Last year was our first year, and we had conversations on water policy, transportation, and leadership. Tonight's theme is pre-K for San Antonio. The panel will be moderated by Rick Casey, an old friend of mine, a 1968 alum of St. Mary's University in psychology. I always thought it was communication studies or political science, but psychology. Rick, the campus police have told me that they've ticketed you, and at rifling through your files, they discovered you still owe a ticket from 1967, so on your way out, please.
Henry, I'd rather owe it to you than cheat you out of it.
You heard that, Father. Anyway, Rick has had a distinguished career as a journalist for 40 years. He's covered politics, law, and urban affairs for the Houston Chronicle. He's been there since 2003, and previously he was had a very high-profile columns in the San Antonio Express News and San Antonio Light. Without any further ado, welcome home, Rick. Welcome home to St. Mary's University. It's probably changed dramatically since you last been here, but it's your panel now.
Thank you very much. How dramatically, when I came here in 1964, are you sitting down? They had just raised the tuition to $20 a semester hour. It looks like a great crowd. I'm really impressed with how many people are here. I would like to start by asking for a show of hands, and I'd like to be honest, I've got four questions. One is, how many of you already know that you're in favor of the mayor's proposal for an eighth of a cent to fund pre-K education? Okay, good chunk. How many of you already know that you think it's a bad idea? Okay, another group of people. How many of you are here just because you have questions about it, you want to learn more about it? Okay. How many of you actually already have a question in mind that you know you want to ask? Okay. All right. I trust you're not so shy that some of you won't be inspired to ask some more questions after we get going here. I suspect that you all read something about it. It is a proposal that has quite a bit of detail. We're going to begin with each of our panelists, Mayor Castro and County Commissioner Kevin Wolf, who has opposed it. And I admire his courage because he's in danger of invoking the wrath of his father, who is very much like all the other former mayors in favor of it. He will give his position on it. And then we will turn to questions and a discussion between the two of them. I think you're going to find this more to be a discussion than a debate, but I think it'll have perhaps at least the same result, which is to help us understand what it is and what are the objections to it. So we're going to begin with Mayor Julian Castro laying out the program, I suspect.
Right. Your mic. Oh, okay. Y'all can hear me. All right, good. I don't need the microphone. Well, first of all, thank you all very much for having us this evening. My apologies for not being quite as formal as everyone. I ran over here, and so it's a little hot for me. First of all, thank you very much to St. Mary's University for hosting us this evening. We really appreciate the opportunity as part of this community conversation to inform the public about what pre-K for SA is on both sides. I'm also always happy to be at the university. My brother Joaquin and I grew up just a stone's throw from here on Globe Street, and so used to sneak into one of the gyms and play tennis and run around the track a lot. I think we actually got thrown out a couple of times as well, but are very, very proud of the university. 20 years ago, my brother and I left Globe Street for college. And when we left for college after we graduated in 92, it was the first time that I had ever really been away from San Antonio. I had been born here, I grew up here in the public schools, graduated from Jeff, and then went away to the Bay Area. It was the first time that I really had the opportunity to compare my hometown to my new hometown. And in a lot of ways, what I saw there made me happy for San Antonio. San Antonio compared well. San Antonio has always been a very authentic city, a genuine city, of very hardworking people. This is a place of great fundamental character. This is the kind of place that I often say that when two people pass each other on the street, that they still look each other in the eye. That means a lot. Try doing that in Midtown Manhattan or downtown Chicago. But I also could compare the Bay Area in some ways that San Antonio didn't do as well on. I saw over there a community that was more well-educated, had higher income levels, at the beginning of the dot-com boom, was more entrepreneurial, more innovative, more ready to take on the jobs of the 21st century. Of course, that's not how I thought about it as an 18, 19, 20-year-old college student. But reflecting back, that's what I saw. And my interest in serving in public office came about as a result of wondering, how could you create the best of those communities? How could you create a community that was both authentic, genuine, culturally rich, maintained a sense of community even as it got bigger, but also was well-educated, could attract good jobs and grow them, ready for the 21st century? That's basically, as I've served on the council and as mayor, that's basically what I've pursued, trying to help us get to that city. A couple of weeks after I became mayor, I saw a report from the Dallas branch of the Federal Reserve that compared San Antonio to a whole bunch of cities that we consider our competitor cities, places like Austin and Orlando and Phoenix, San Jose. And on most of the measures, San Antonio actually ranked well. Cost of housing, general cost of living, quality of life. But on one measure, we were actually dead last. That measure was on education. We had the lowest percent of folks with a college degree. A few months ago, the Lumina Foundation compared San Antonio as one of the top 100 metros to all of the others in terms of higher education attainment, and we ranked number 84. At the same time, we recognize that today it's estimated that 64% of the jobs out there require something more than a high school diploma. Could be a university degree, a community college degree, or some sort of technical training. At the same time, according to who you believe, we either have a 15% dropout rate, if you believe the TEA, or a 40% dropout rate, if you believe some of the nonprofits that do work analyzing it. Pre-K for SA came out of an initiative that was a task force that was chaired by Charles Budd of HEB and Joe Robles of USAA with other business leaders in the community and education leaders, folks like former NEISD Superintendent Richard Middleton and former Northside Superintendent John Folks, to figure out how we could move the needle on education. So they looked at different things, dropout recovery programs, working in middle school years that are often the dicey years for young people. But the research was very, very compelling that if you want to make the biggest impact with limited resources on education, the best time to start is early, before children ever get behind, when their brains are developing at their peak, when we have an opportunity to ensure that they get off to a great beginning in their educational journey. So Pre-K for SA is basically about an investment in educating 22,400 four-year-olds over the next 8 years with high-quality, full-day pre-K. There are about 5,700 four-year-olds in our city today that don't get high-quality, full-day pre-K. We would accomplish that in basically two ways. First, on a competitive grant basis, we would expand existing programs in the public schools, charter schools, or nonprofits that are doing excellent work already. And secondly, we would build or renovate four model centers of pre-K education, one in each quadrant of the city, that would serve about 2,000 students. This initiative really is about expecting more from everyone. It's expecting more from the students. It goes until 5:30 in the afternoon. It's expecting more from the parents, because we know that a parent can be the most effective shepherd of a child's education. We're taking a page out of some of the great work charter schools have done to require that they bring their kids to the drop-off point or to school on time, that they meet with the teacher regularly, that they're a part of the social life of the school with their child, that they are responsible for their child's education. The initiative expects more from teachers. It pays them more, but it also demands excellence and that they work a longer day. It expects more from policymakers. It says, we have a clear goal. We want to reduce the achievement gap by 10% in math and reading in the third grade. And we're going to measure that every single year in an age-appropriate way and then report the results out to the community so that you can measure what we've done in cold, hard numbers. And then finally, it also asks more of you. It says, this is a 1/8 of 1 cent sales tax increase. There's no way to sugarcoat that. We're asking you basically for the median household in San Antonio to invest $7.81 per year per family for the purpose of educating over 8 years those 22,400 four-year-olds. Now, you know, there are a couple of things that make this a really neat, unique program. The first thing is we're not limiting participation in this initiative to the state-imposed income cutoffs. Right now, the state says if your family makes less than 185% of poverty, then you can get free pre-K, half-day pre-K. But if you make more, you can't. This is the first initiative of its kind that will actually bust through those income caps to say we're actually reserving slots, significant number of slots, specifically for families who haven't been meeting those income cutoffs. Because what we hear out there over and over again is that there are a whole bunch of families that don't make so little that they can get it for free, but they don't make so much that they can put down $1,000, $900, whatever it would take to get high-quality full-day pre-K. The second thing that makes it unique is that we're also investing robustly in teacher training for teachers from across classrooms, not just the ones where these students are in pre-K all the way to third grade, and in public schools and non-public schools. Because we know that if you really want to maintain the gains that these kids make, it can't end in the pre-K year. You got to ensure that these young people have teachers who are better trained, better prepared for differentiated learning, better prepared for getting more educated students the next year and the year after that. And this initiative ensures that across the board, whether a child is in one of these classrooms or another classroom, that they're going to have a better trained teacher. So I wanted to come here tonight and to say that folks from the education community, our 7 chambers of commerce, largest chambers of commerce, our business leaders from USAA, HEB, Rackspace, Valero, Newstar, Toyota, the Spurs, support this. It's a well-constructed plan for the future. The alternative is basically what's been happening in Austin. The $5 billion cut to education last session, basically an attitude that pats this issue on the head and says, you know, we care about the kids. Yeah, we agree with you. Education is important, but there's never a plan to do anything about it. The resources get diminished and diminished. Texas already ranks 47th, 48th in terms of per pupil funding. There's a head fake about, hey, you know, sometimes it's easier to just say no, but really you should just say no on this one. Sometimes we should say no to initiatives. But if you do the research, if you look at the credibility of the folks in education and in business who were supporting this, and if you do a cost-benefit analysis, the cost of $7.81 for the median household to the benefit of busting through those income guidelines, getting to more families, educating more children in an excellent way, I think you'll come to the conclusion that it is not worth waiting or hoping for Washington or Austin to do something for San Antonio, because that's not going to happen. And we can always chase a perfect plan. We can say, yeah, you know, I would do this a little bit differently. I would tinker with it here. The fact is, there is no perfect plan. But this is a strong start, and you got to start somewhere. And this is worth the investment. Thank you.
Well, let me start off by thanking everyone that came tonight. This is really kind of special for me. While some of the students here see this particular building as older, I will tell you that my wife and I were married here at St. Mary's, and our reception was the first event held in this room. So, and my daughter's here as well, so you're the product of this university. I'm so going to pay for that one when I get home tonight. So it is special. And St. Mary's itself has just been a tremendous institution for all of us here. You know, while Sandy and I graduated from here, so did my father. In fact, y'all were in school here at the same time. So a long history and tradition of being active in the community. And doing functions like this is a perfect example of that. I knew that we would have a good crowd tonight. I did not realize we would have this large of a crowd tonight. And whether you're for or against or undecided, thank you so much for taking the time to come here and listen. This is the third time that the mayor and I have had an event like this. All of them, I believe, have been really enjoyable. We got one of the best compliments after our last one. A few folks came up to us and said, you know what, it's the first time in a long time we've seen a Republican and Democrat actually have an honest, cordial conversation, debate about something they disagreed on. Wish they could do that. Thank you. And saying, wish we did that at all levels of our government, because you know what, if we did, we'd get a lot more done than we do today. There are a number of things that the mayor and I wholeheartedly agree on, especially in regards to education. I don't think anybody disagrees that 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 is the foundation that we all build from in order to make a better society. So this, for me, is not about whether or not pre-K is a good thing or a bad thing. I think we all agree it's a good thing. For me, it's about the plan itself. And will the plan accomplish what it proposes to accomplish? Now, when I first came out against this, a columnist wrote an article, essentially said something along the lines of how I should quit whining. That the amount was minuscule. I differ a little bit on the definition of minuscule. We're talking about $350 million over an 8-year period of time. $350 million, that requires a tax increase. At a time when all of us are suffering from a down economy. And while I think we are starting up the hill, it doesn't happen overnight. It will take at least as long to climb back to where we were as it did for us to fall. And so putting an extra burden on individuals, I do not believe philosophically is a good thing. But beyond just the taxing piece, I started to look at the plan itself. And there were a whole bunch of people that came out very early. You heard the mayor mention them. The chambers, different former superintendents, a number of the school districts, the other members in the business community, some truly heavy hitters. And all of them said the same thing I said. Pre-K is a good thing. We could do something along those lines. But then as the plan started to come out and develop, it became harder and harder to get specific answers to the questions. And if I'm going to commit to spending $350 million, I want to know what the return on investment's really going to be. Before I ran for office, some of you know that I grew up on the sidelines of politics. My father was elected to the House of Representatives when I was 5, 1970, so that gives you about how old I am. And I watched him serve as a state representative, then a state senator. I watched him run for Congress twice and lose twice. I watched him as a council member, later the mayor, and I have the privilege to serve with him today on Commissioner's Court. Now, he's pretty happy with how I grew up. He does have one lament. He can't figure out how the heck I became a Republican when he's been a lifelong Democrat. Different times, different experiences. You know, I promised my wife, she still holds this over my head when we got married over 20 years ago this past summer, that I would never get into politics, that I would not run for office. I'm sorry, honey. But I've spent a lot of time away from San Antonio. Well, I was born and raised here, went to Clark High School, and obviously went to St. Mary's here. But right out of high school, I joined the military. And I joined the military and spent... Are you telling me I'm out of time already, Rick? I mean, oh, somebody's calling him. Okay. It was probably that reporter that wrote that article about him. At any rate, joined the military and saw a bunch of different places, spent a lot of time overseas, was there when we bombed the coast of Libya, came back, started a VFW post. At the time, I was one of the youngest members in the VFW here. And I utilized my time in the military to essentially pay for my education here at St. Mary's. And then later obtained my master's going through utilizing the business that I worked for to help pay for my master's here as well. And then I spent 20 years in a business career traveling a number of different places, Delaware first, and then later when Sydney was 3.5, we moved to Manhattan. We moved there 2 months before 9/11. And it was obviously a very scary and interesting time. We watched 9/11 happen out of our office window from our apartment. And I tell you these things because all of them are experiences that have affected me and my family in what I did next. And I was fortunate. Sometimes the best time for those of you who are starting off careers, sometimes the best time to look for a job is when you're not looking for a job. And I come home for, well, I'm supposed to say I came home for a friend's wedding. It's not true. I came home for a friend's bachelor party. A lot more fun. Okay. And they asked me, you know, what's next for you? And I told them, well, you know, I'm on the corporate gig here. I'm working my way up the ladder. I'm working in New York right now. I'll go overseas next, do about 3 or 4 years, come back to New York. I'll be one or two down from the top in my particular field, and there's a wonderful corporate career. They said, well, such and such company is looking for somebody back in San Antonio. By this time, our daughter's 5. We were really looking at schools. We already had her in pre-K. We were looking, you know, where are we going to send her in New York? And then the opportunity to come home happened. And Sandy and I, we talked about it. We said, you know, both our families are from here. We love San Antonio. It keeps drawing you back. For those of you that have left and come back, you know what I'm talking about. There's something very, very special about this place. And that is something the mayor and I also agree with. So we come back, and 2 months after I'm back, we have 2 council people and later a 3rd indicted and later convicted for doing really stupid stuff. And that was sort of the straw that broke this camel's back. Said, you know what? I need to do something. I need to participate more than I have before. Not just do some charitable work, not just serve on this board, but really get into it. And Sandy knew before I did. She goes, you're going to run for office, aren't you? I said, yeah, baby, I think I am. Matter of fact, the first reporter I talked to was, I saw him in the back there, Jaime Castillo. There's Jaime. And he was like, you're going to do what? And you're going to run as a what? But it was my way of getting in and wanting to do the same types of things that I know the mayor wants to do for our community. And we may differ in how to get those done, but I think from a personal standpoint, we both are true in our desire to help improve our community. About this plan, here are the questions and difficulties I have with it. To start off with, transportation. I have not heard a good transportation plan. We're talking about building 4 new places, whether that's leasing existing buildings or building from scratch. Regardless, we're talking about 4 new locations. You're going to have to get these children there somehow or some way. And it's not the 4-year-old that you're selling, it's the parent and caregiver that you're selling. So how are you going to convince that parent involvement? How are you going to get them? Because again, the mayor's absolutely right that the parent has more to say about how their child is educated than any of us ever will. And so I don't see a good plan around parent involvement and how to get the children to participate. The next piece is, where do the dollars come from? A number of different sources. Yes, you've heard about the sales tax, the 1/8 cent piece. That's roughly $30 million, $31 million a year if you assume that sales remain relatively flat to what they are today. You've also heard about the piece that it will only cost you $7.81. That's true. However, it is based on a very small segment of what the sales tax would cost that particular population. If you added in everybody, that number is closer to $50 to $60. $300 million from the tax, another $50 million or so from state and federal dollars. State and federal dollars that were intended for our public school system. In order for the city to attach those dollars, they have to get the individual school districts, and oh, by the way, there's 17 individual school districts in Bexar County. How many times have we lamented how that seems awfully redundant? Why would you have all of this separate infrastructure? You have to get an MOU, a memorandum of understanding between the city and those school districts, A, in order to obtain those state and federal dollars, B, in order to get their permission to actually train these children, however, see the liability for that child still remains with the school district. So in the case of injury, illness, etc., the liability reverts back to the school district and not with the city organization. And while I'm talking about redundancy, that's what I see. From my particular perspective, creating this new municipal corporation is the effect of creating another school district. It is the same type of infrastructure. You will have the equivalent of a superintendent. You will have teachers. You will have administration. Teachers, by the way, that you're going to pay on average $15,000 to $20,000 or more a year than you can pay in public school. So guess where the talent's coming from? The public school system that you enjoy today. All of that bleeds from our existing, a point we agree on, broken system. But here's the part that I have the greatest difficulty with. And I've looked at these things in a number of different areas. One of the most recent was actually, they came and did at the Congress of Children, did a presentation, and one of the guest speakers from Miami said, for these programs to work, they must include everyone. If you exclude anyone, they will not work. And this program excludes a lot. Aside from the different thresholds that you've already know about, it also excludes anyone who lives in a suburban city. If you live in a Von Army, if you live in a Castle Hills, a Hill Country Village, a Windcrest, you're excluded. Not only do you not get to vote on this, but if it passes, your children won't be able to participate. If you live in the unincorporated area of Bexar County, you will be excluded. This is probably, personally for me, my biggest fault in this plan. It is not all-inclusive. And in any time you're going to do a program like this, the key to success is making it available to everyone. Thank you.
First, I want you to know that you have witnessed a miracle here. They each were given 15 minutes, and neither of them reached that amount of time. Juliana, I'd like to begin with you. I'd like to hear more about the structure of the program and what it works. If I understand correctly, you're not only talking about model centers that will bring best practices to the children who will attend there, but that there's also a component that involves training teachers. Help us understand the details of that.
Yeah, so the way that this would work, the way it would be set up, is actually dictated by state law. Just over a decade ago, folks from San Antonio went and asked the legislature for permission so that cities could actually levy a sales tax for a set of different reasons. And one of the reasons that they could do it would be for early childhood education. The way that it would work under state law is that the city council would establish a governing board of citizens. The mayor would appoint the chair, and each council member gets an appointment to that governing board. That governing board is in charge of creating a budget that is approved by the city council, of hiring an executive director. That executive director would then be in charge of hiring the teachers and the principals, or sometimes they call them directors of the centers. The centers are only one part of it. That's 2,000 slots. The other 1,700 slots would be on a competitive basis. Grants would be awarded out to folks who are already doing great work in the pre-K space. Whether it's public school, a lot of it will be public school, but we've also held out the option of working with charter schools and nonprofit schools as well. One of the places that we visited as part of the research was a Catholic facility on the south side of town. So the education of the children is one part of it. Another part of it is the teacher training. What we found in Houston when we went to Houston was they said, look, if all you do is teach the children in pre-K and you improve that, what happens is that when they get into the next year, the kindergarten year, it's like hitting molasses. And then they almost lose those gains. So what are you going to do about that? What we did is that we said, all right, we're going to train teachers from the pre-K year all the way to the third grade, so that you're training them in waves as these kids move up to kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade.
How does that training take place?
It will take place there at the model centers. It'll take place with the school districts as well as on a more limited basis with the charter schools and the nonprofit schools.
Kevin, you said your biggest objection was that it's not for everybody. I think you understand that the city can't really be using a city tax base to provide for the county, and then it wouldn't be everybody because it would be for the state. So the state has cut back on its early childhood. They had grants for a full day for a certain population. They've cut that out because of the crisis. They've also cut other funds from schools per pupil substantially. So here is the city doing something. If you want more to be involved, why not try to figure out a way for the county to get involved with it?
That would be correct if we were talking about a property tax, but we're not. We're talking about a sales tax. And you will hear people say, well, okay, just don't shop in the city of San Antonio. That's not very realistic either. 85% of our population is made up by the city of San Antonio. So, you know, if you live in a neighborhood on the northeast side, a place that's been in the news here recently, Camelot, for example, it is an area that nobody seems to want. It was a nice neighborhood in 1970. Today, it's in horrible condition. It is surrounded by municipalities, but nobody will annex it. There are no Walmarts or HEBs or any other sort of commercial infrastructure inside that unincorporated area. And I promise you, a vast number of the children that live there would qualify other than for that particular circumstance. So if we were talking about a property tax that was only levied against the citizens of San Antonio, then I would agree with that. But we're not. We're talking about a sales tax that all of us pay.
Let me answer that, Rick. Let's think about that for a second. I want you to think about how a sales tax actually works. A sales tax is paid at the point of sale, no matter where you come from, whether you live in San Antonio or, as Commissioner Wolf points out, you live outside of San Antonio. So I want you to think about a second how we would actually distinguish between, if we don't say it's for San Antonio residents who are the ones voting on this and you know, usually get to determine how San Antonio spends its money. If you ask the folks at our power centers, the Quarry, Huebner Oaks, the Forum, they'll tell you that particularly on the holidays, a vast amount of their revenue comes from Mexican shoppers. There are Mexican shoppers that pay more sales tax than a lot of us in the room because that's how much they spend in San Antonio. There are folks who go to Dallas on business, or Houston, who go to Houston on business, that spend more on sales tax. They live in San Antonio, but they pay more sales tax in Houston or Dallas than a lot of Houstonians or Dallasites. So where do you draw the line? If somebody lives 5 minutes outside of the city, maybe you could analyze it by school district. Maybe you could say, well, since all school districts are in Bexar County, that's the way that we should do it. But actually, that's not true. More than one of our school districts actually goes beyond Bexar County. In fact, Northside goes beyond Bexar County. So now do we include that other county that they go into? You can see why statutory law and common law has evolved over the years to say, look, this is a San Antonio sales tax. It's San Antonio voters are going to vote on it. The good news is that we have developed a way to be able to provide those services to the county. A great example of that is the library system. We have what's called a joint service agreement with the library system. So the city of San Antonio is paid a certain amount every year by the county so that county residents can go and use the libraries. They can check out books or videos or whatever they want to do. They can use the libraries. Same thing with animal care services. We get a fee from the county so that the city's effort goes into the unincorporated areas and does the animal care work. What I anticipate in the coming years is that this initiative is going to be so successful that we're going to have folks in Camelot and other areas that do want to participate. And I look forward to knocking on Commissioner Wolf's door at that time and striking up one of those joint services agreements so that we can have it, can expand it to more folks in the county.
If I may, Rick, I'd like to talk about the joint services piece. Again, it keeps slipping my mind, but the same reporter actually mentioned the pittance we pay to the city for library services. It's $3.6 million a year. There are 254 counties in the state of Texas. Only two give money to municipalities for library services.
Kevin, I have to point out that the residents here who live in San Antonio, they get to pay for that library twice. So
yes.
The people in the county who are using it are getting a pretty good deal. They're only paying for it once.
Yes. The fact is, though, is, and this is where my point is coming to, when I first ran for office, what I looked at is, what is each level of government supposed to do? What is it that is their primary mission? And if you start at the federal level, that's our U.S. Constitution. If you take it down to the state level, that's our state constitution. If you take it down to the city level, it's the city charter. And within the city charter, it gives you some very specific duties. Can you go outside of those duties and do things outside of those? Yes. The question isn't whether you can, it's the question is whether you should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. The primary duties of the city are to provide those basic services that most of us seem to take for granted. Street maintenance, police, fire, trash pickup, parks, libraries. Those are core pieces of what a city is supposed to do. It's why they have the powers that they have that are far grander than what counties have.
I'm really enjoying this. This is good. But I would like to open up questions to the group. And what's going to happen, if you will stand up if you want to ask a question, just don't be inconspicuous. If you're along the wall and have a question, raise your hand. And we've got two strong-looking graduate students here with microphones. They will make sure that you don't take over the microphone, but you are welcome to ask a question. Why don't we start with this gentleman right here?
My name is Charles Rodriguez. I'm a 74-plus year resident of San Antonio. Love it here, and I'll never leave. And I graduated from St. Mary's University with a degree in chemistry over 50 years ago. The questions that came to my mind tonight when the mayor was speaking would fill a volume. There are more questions than have been answered to date about this. And I'm going to try to keep it down to two prongs to one question with a preamble here. I'll try to keep it under 15 minutes, Rick.
See if you can keep it under 2 minutes, if you will.
Okay, thank you. This initiative is one that purports to solve our education problems, which we know we have some very severe education problems. And not only the state, but the federal government have been for years and years and years throwing more money at education problems to get less results. So then we get into the investment aspects of this. I understand investment as taking my capital assets and putting them into some kind of a security and expecting a monetary return for that. How is this an investment? Using my money, not your money, using my money to put into a program that is just another sop at trying to prove the education system, to try to solve it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for the question, Mr. Rodriguez. Let me answer them. First of all, let me say that there is no panacea, that this, we're not saying this is the solution to education. I do believe, though, that it's going to make a profound impact on the lives of thousands and thousands of young people, and that over time, that it will make a significant difference in a better educated generation of San Antonians that are more likely to graduate from high school, more likely to go to college. And don't take my word for it. You can look up the research from the Bush School at A&M to a whole bunch of other studies that have been done that demonstrate that you get a great return on investment. Because you see, it's really pay me now or pay me later. The return is that we can choose to have these young folks go in a better direction now, never get behind, do better academically. That's what the research is very compelling about. That's why all of these folks have signed on to this. Or we can wait until they're more likely to drop out from high school, more likely to get incarcerated, more likely to cost us money in the future. That is the return on the investment. I'd also say that it's been brought up sometimes that is this a duplication of services? It's not a duplication of services. We're not already paying for what we're going to get here. Two very precise examples of that. Right now, the state of Texas tells families that make more than 185% of poverty, if they knock on the door of one of these schools and say, I want my child to be in pre-K, they're told no. This initiative tells them there can be a place for you. Secondly, Northside and Northeast and Judson are three school districts in our city that if a parent says, I want my kid in full-day pre-K, they say no. We only offer half-day pre-K. And the research is very compelling that a full day of pre-K, particularly one like this that is longer hours, it goes until 5:30, is much more beneficial academically to students than half day. So there's no duplication there. There's a profound benefit, and I won't say that it's a silver bullet or a panacea, but it will make a huge difference in the future.
Kevin?
Those same studies also say that if you have not aligned the curriculum in any particular pre-K program that you choose to take your child to with wherever it is they're going to go to school after, and the majority of us go through the public school system, then the net effects are gone somewhere between first and third grade. I have not seen the plan that aligns the curriculum with our different public school systems. And if those different public school systems choose not to sign an MOU with the city of San Antonio, then the children in that public school system will also not be eligible for this program.
At what stage of development is the curriculum for the pre-K?
Yeah, so we have a group ranging from folks at Trinity to a couple of our other universities that have been working on, essentially once the governing board is in place, making recommendations for the curriculum. There are only there's a limited number of state-recognized curricula that can be used. And so what we want is one that is excellent, that shows the best potential for results. So we're not grasping at straws here. We're dealing with a limited universe of curricula that are already identified. The council is not going to make that decision. That's going to be made, that's a decision that's going to be made by the experts on the ground in those schools. And it's going to be a curricula that is also modified, particularized for the San Antonio community. So that's not, the issue of curriculum is not some kind of magic question. I have no doubt that an excellent curriculum will be put in place.
You do. Let's go to the gentleman here. All right.
My name is Louis Barrios. My family's in the restaurant business. And my concern is with, everybody always likes to blame the state of Everybody always likes to blame the state of Texas that they keep cutting the education funds. But as a local independent businessman, we have two restaurants. We're building our third restaurant right now, close to Westover Hills Boulevard. Is the city council at this level continues to pass different ordinances, and most of them are punitive to businesses. You have a grease trap ordinance. You have a smoking ordinance. You have a tree ordinance. And it makes it more and more difficult for businesses to grow, and then they don't generate that sales tax dollars. The smoking ordinance, for example, really hit a lot of these small bars to tune a 40% of their business. So
I'm sorry, but let's stay on the pre-K program.
The pre-K program, okay. The question is, the more pressure you put on business, the more difficult it is for it to generate the sales taxes that the state needs, and it puts more pressure on us to raise our prices, so you have food inflation, which generates more sales tax at a localized level. But it makes it harder for the consumer and puts more pressure on the consumer, not just the sales tax, but the increase in food cost, the tree ordinance that it created, the sprawl.
Okay, we're going to ask the mayor to address that issue in connection with this program.
Please.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Louis, for the question. Of course, you and I have had this running debate over the last several years, starting with the smoking ordinance. I would say that it's very important that folks know that if we were to increase the sales tax by 1/8 of 1 cent, that's $7.81 for the median household, San Antonio would become the last significant-sized city in the state of Texas to do so. Austin, Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, El Paso, Corpus Christi, all of them are at their cap and have been for a while. Houston's been at the cap since 1978, and Austin, I believe, has been there since 1994. So let's compare the economies of both of those cities. Now, we're very proud of our economy here in San Antonio, right? We've done very well. In fact, we've seen that at City Hall because our sales tax receipts have been going up over the last year. Austin is doing even better. Houston is doing very well. Generally, the Texas cities are doing very, very well. And so if the question is, do I believe that this 1/8 of 1 cent sales tax increase is going to somehow be a drag on the local economy, I don't believe the evidence anywhere in the state of Texas would support that. And secondly, I believe that it's going to be a boon in the coming years because of the investment that's made in these young people that are able to get better jobs. They have more purchasing power. They are able to spend more in the future and more likely to buy a home, to buy a car, to entertain themselves, to go out and eat. It is going to be a boon to us. It's going to, I think, enhance our prosperity, not take away from it in the coming years.
Is there a question from this side of the room? Where's our marshal? Can you come up here?
While we're waiting, Rick, can I
speak
to that just a little bit?
Yes.
My mother used to tell me when I'd give her the excuse, well, everybody's doing it. She said, well, if everybody jumped off a bridge, would you do it as well? Just because every major city in the state has moved their tax up to the maximum doesn't mean that we should. The other piece you have to look at is what do they spend that tax on? If I look here in the city of San Antonio, our most underfunded basic service is via and transportation. Why would the city not first consider increasing one of its core pieces prior to doing something outside of their core duties?
Hi, my name is Stacy Mazuka, and I'm a student here at St. Mary's. I have two questions. One, you mentioned at the beginning of your discussion that you had a philosophical problem. I'm assuming you meant ethically, as far as how can you say that you want to exclude some people and how can this not be all inclusive in general? I guess the question that I would pose is it more ethically correct to delay it even longer, even more, in hopes that you'll come up with this perfect plan that, as the mayor said, will never really come together? You have to start somewhere. So in the meantime, it's better to have that starting point. Another question I had on the opposite end is, where does the lottery come into this as far as funding is concerned for these programs? And
I'll take care of the lottery question real quick. We'll let him get to your first question.
And then
question.
You just mentioned as far as VIA and the transportation system, as far as transportation for these students who would be going, couldn't it be implemented to where there's some type of city bus pass that can be given to these particular families? Because, I mean, in reality, you're going to eventually have to have more buses for more students as the city grows. It's not a question of, can we do it right now? It's a matter of we have to do it eventually anyway.
Thank you. Okay. The lottery money is already spoken for by the state legislature, and I doubt that the mayor would be able, persuasive as he can be, to get all of them to agree to put all that money into San Antonio's pre-K. Kevin, let's talk about the issue she brought up for you.
Yeah, actually, I do believe that when you're going to put in any type of social program, you need to make it at least as available to everyone as you can. And this is very exclusive. I do have a philosophical difference with that. But I'll go a little further with it. And it's back to what role is whose responsibility. The more we become an enabler, allowing our different levels of government to not do their job, is the longer that they won't do their job. And so the more of you that come to things like this, the more of you that start voting today or on election day and really speaking your voice, because that is your power, the sooner you can really change it where it's supposed to be changed. but we've gotten very lazy. We think it's a great day when 10% of the population, eligible population, turns out to vote. So 10% of the population end up making the decisions for 90% of the rest of the population. So I will tell you, yes, philosophically, I have a problem with that. And I do think the greater good is to force our institutions to do what they're supposed to do. And if they don't, then get up and make a change. And you can do that starting tomorrow.
If I can just fill in a couple of the questions. First of all, with regard to transportation, there is an approach that has been laid out, and that's to use a magnet school approach to transportation. Basically, the bus wouldn't literally go to every house, but there would be convenient points where the bus would pick up these four-year-olds. We know that no parent is going to put their four-year-old on a VIA bus and say, go ahead, here you go. Now, you know, I mean, no responsible parent. We are in the location of the centers. We're going to make sure that they're close to good bus lines and they're close to major highways. They're accessible. There will be one in each quadrant of the city, east, west, north, and south. The city also has been involved in education for a while with the After School Challenge Program, with the San Antonio Education Partnership, with Head Start. We'll have another question is probably, how is this different from Head Start? Yeah, you know, it is different, and we can explain that in another question if folks have it. We've been doing education for a while. This is not completely foreign. What we always do is that we work with the school districts to supplement what they're doing and to try and do it in an excellent way. And then finally, I would say on this issue of taxation, the fact is that San Antonio over the last 7 years has reduced the city workforce by 686 people, 5% of the workforce. Ronald Reagan didn't even do that. We've accomplished that in San Antonio. We've reduced our ranks by 5%. We also, in the last 6 years, have reduced the property tax rate 3 times. And we were the first big city in Texas to put onto the ballot the issue of the senior tax freeze, because we knew that these appraisals were skyrocketing and that our seniors on fixed incomes couldn't afford to keep paying and paying on higher property taxes. And so I pushed that in 2005, and the voters at 82% voted for it. We also have made the cuts necessary during these tough times, not to require a tax increase, but to downsize. And we have a AAA bond rating. We're the only city in the top 10 by population with a AAA bond rating for our general obligation bonds. So we're in good fiscal health, and this is something that we can do successfully.
I'm afraid that we have a deadline, and it is a certain other debate, I believe, is going on tonight.
This one's more fun.
Yeah, yeah, come on.
I thought of wearing a long wig. And I'm afraid we're about out of time. Can I just ask one more quick question? In 8 years, the voters will vote again whether to renew this. Somebody voiced a criticism to me, well, you know, if we're really serious, why not do it? You know, why limit it to 8 years? I hope it's because you've got a plan so that in 8 years the voters can figure out whether it's worth keeping.
Yeah.
I want to hear about
that. That's right. You know, originally we thought that it would be 5 years because the Alamo Dome vote in 89, January of 89, was a 5-year vote. It was projected at that time. I think it only went 4. And the Proposition 3, now Proposition 1 for the purchase of conservation easements over the recharge zone was 5. If folks go to sanantonio.gov or prekforsa.com, they'll see that there's an actual plan to the rollout of this. And the reason that it's 8 years is that in the first 2 years we're building the 4 centers. There's a quality control third year where nothing more is done. And then from 4 to 8, we add in working with existing providers. We're also going to be measuring how the students do meticulously over the next 8 years. So this is going to come back up. It's not an indefinite tax. It will come back up in 8 years. And you know what? In 8 years, if it's done a great job and had results, I hope that folks will renew it. If the legislature, you know, hopefully they'll do something about it, but I wouldn't hold my breath. If they haven't, if it's not doing a good job, then I would encourage it never to come up again, or if it does, to vote against it. But we have to start somewhere. We're never going to find a perfect plan, and this is a very strong start. It's worth investing $7.81 in.
Kevin, take a minute.
Sure. Real quickly, government has a great ability to do this. They create something at a particular point in time to service an obvious need. The problem is they often forget that over time things and situations change and they don't go back and turn it off. I'll give you the perfect example that took the last two legislative sessions to turn off, and that was called the Bear Met Water System, created in 1945 and took us forever to turn off. So be careful when it looks like a great idea today. I think Rick is absolutely right in asking, what's the question tomorrow? I promise you that 8 years from now, if this is an up and going concern, whether you, the voters, decide at that time that you like it or not, won't matter. I promise the city will continue it because the pressure will be so great. You can't let these people go. You can't stop training these particular children. The mayor mentioned before how much is spent on education. Over $25 million a year is spent by the city on external education. So it's not as easy as here's the plan, it's over in 8 years, you get another choice. I promise you, 8 years from now, you won't have a choice. You might have a choice on the sales tax, but not whether or not your city's going to pay for it.
Well, we shall see. Certainly all of you, being as young as you are, most of you, get a chance to see. I want to thank St. Mary's University for having this conversation. Thank you all for being here. And
Wait a minute. We have a couple of announcements.
I'm sorry. One more there. But I do want to say vote. Go vote. You can do it tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Before you go, I want to remind you, one of the reasons we have a deadline is because immediately after, at 8 o'clock, the Student Government Association is sponsoring a presidential debate watch. So we invite you all to stay here to do that. But first of all, we have some mementos for the panelists, and I want to thank Rick Casey for coming back and
well
moderating. This is indeed a community conversation in the spirit of St. Mary's University, and thank you all for coming. But we have some gifts first. Leonel Nunez, our graduate assistant from Public Administration, for the mayor.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. One more.
Thank you all. Thank you.
You get one too.
That's good.
Nice luck.
Very good.
And one for Rick Casey.
Great job.
Thank you very much.
And